Off the ball with BetDaq.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sport 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.
And you're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. Joining us this Saturday, we've got Danny Hughes, an all-star from Down, Anthony Moyles, a former Meath captain, and David Brady, former Mayo footballer. As you're all very welcome, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure, thank you.
Nice handy question to start with, Danny. What the hell has gone wrong with Down?
I quit, Benny quit, and a couple of our boys quit, and that was that's what we would say.
So it's your fault is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Well, we have to take the blame, I suppose. Listen, I could... how long do you have?
We've got a long time.
I'm sure the boys wouldn't want to hear my thing. Down.
Don't worry, I'm going to get to them as well. Things aren't exactly rosy.
Nothing wrong with my side anyway.
Down are just in bad shape. They've actually, this last couple of years, they've turned themselves into Division 3, Division 4 outfit. And, you know, I suppose I've said it now for a couple of years now that the county board probably, you know, have to step up and take their share of responsibility.
How does the system work in Down? What is the club architecture like?
Because we have four divisions. One division is junior, two divisions that are most of it's intermediate, and then we've got about 16 teams that are senior teams. Close to 50 clubs in Down. But, you know, although the population, the density of Down's quite strong, you've got half it from a Protestant tradition, so you've immediately half the county's not there anymore.
It's still massive though, isn't it?
Well, it's still big, and to be honest, do we have 15 players to compete week in, week out at probably Division 2 level at the minute? We do, but we're just not getting them out on the field. There's no ambition really there to get them out, and players like Marty Clark, like Keane Mooney, guys that have decided that, you know, county football's not for them at the minute. There's no incentive for them to go there, and unfortunately that's just the way it is, and nothing that anybody can do now can persuade them to throw the hat in the ring. And I suppose when you're dealing with the younger generation, I'm sure the other guys would see this, that it's not like it was taken for granted when I started.
To play for the county.
That you wanted to play. That was your life ambition. Mm. It was your life. That is what you dictated your life. It went ahead of family, friends, everything else.
Because you felt you had a chance of winning something though, right?
Absolutely. Always did. And I suppose that 91, 94 thing and the carry on that and the fact that you experienced that as a young child, it really pushed you on to say, right, you know what, I want what they had. I want to experience what they did. On the back of that, you know, that pushed me on, particularly me.
So what are the reasons why people aren't coming to play? I mean, obviously there are individual reasons for people, but on the whole, is it that they don't feel that they're going to be competitive? Because it's weird for a team that was in Division 1 this year to have such a negativity around it.
Yeah, and it's done quite well over the last kind of 6-7 years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose when I started off in 2002, we had some really, really bad years. Like, we had, you know, we were in Division 3 at one time, but there was all, you know, more often than not, the best players were on the county panel. And, you know, we built. And it was Mickey Linden, James McCartan, all them guys were coming to the end as we were coming in. And there were big shoes to fill, and it was going to take a while. But we developed into a pretty decent outfit. You know, we were starting to come. We needed a few more players like Marty when he came back, just to give us that 4 or 5 points guaranteed a game that'll, you know, even for free kicks alone, that'll take us over games like we lost in Wicklow in 2009, remember, by a point, and we missed a bagful. And if we had got through that again, we were in a quarter final of an All Ireland. So those type of players catapulted us on, but there's not enough of them coming through. We don't have a penny. Literally, I was going to ask the boys for a tenner just to take home with us for the give the county, but we just don't have the money.
Why not though? Like, I've just checked, the population is 531,000.
Yeah.
Split it in half, it's still 250. It's like twice the size of Donegal, twice the size of Kildare, twice the size of
Iceland. Nearly.
It's almost exactly the same size as Iceland.
Young guys now, what I find, want more from life. They want to go on the travel and they want to go on holidays. And Down would be quite affluent in respect of, you know, I would say there's not many poor areas of it. And you tend to find that they have options. soccer, rugby, and there's definitely a correlation between that and gays, you know, playing football on the street, for example. You see this in the north of England, for example, and places like that where, you know, unfortunately we have towns there. We don't have a major town. Newry's a major town, and they're Division 3 and Division 4 teams.
And the club teams there.
And that's where you're intermediate and junior teams. And until we get that problem sorted, you know, unfortunately, we're going into only going to get two or three rural players.
Wasn't there a down powerhouse school? Isn't there like
it's in Coleman's and the Abbey? Not producing the players.
Is that not Newry though?
It is, yeah. Right, it's just not producing the players, and we're losing players. We're losing players to Australia and to guys going to college, losing interest, and
We talked about it outside, like how Marty Clark hasn't kicked ball. Now it's his own personal choice, maybe, but how he hasn't kicked the ball. Like he's gone playing Mickey Mouse Aussie Rules game.
That's right. He's way down. I was saying he was way down to Galway there. I think they're playing an Aussie Rules match for some newly formed team. I'm not sure. I've seen it. I've read about it. But Marty, I suppose Marty could walk into training tomorrow, and I think it doesn't matter who manager is. Now, an element of that is the manager. Eamon Burns. Eamon's a very nice chap, but Eamon, like a lot of players that have tasted success over the years, they won't go and knock on anybody's door and make a phone call. I would, and this is their own decision, I'm only reading between the lines, but I would think it's, well, why should they go? They take it for granted because they've done it themselves. Why should they go and make a phone call or somebody, or arrive at somebody's house?
Yeah,
I think one of the first things that Jimmy McGuinness done was he went to Mickey Murphy directly and he said, Mickey, you're going to be captain, you're going to be leader. And that whole human personal relationship with
by all accounts, he had like 5-hour meetings with all of them.
Absolutely.
Sat on the couch like over a period of a couple of weeks in a hotel and like interviewed them and chatted to them and found out about who they were and what they were doing. And, you know, because I'm asking you to make this ridiculous commitment, I need to know a little bit about you.
And what was Jimmy McGuinness? Jimmy McGuinness done a psychology. I think he'd done 3 different degrees at 3 different colleges. And you know what I mean? So Jimmy knew that that's the way he would want to be treated as a player, to make it feel special. And a lot of managers that you see now in the game aren't making players feel special. And with the commitment now that's asked, players are saying, do you know what, the hell is this? I don't feel that I'm wanted. Because there is difficult players that you have to deal with. You know, it's probably us that are sitting in here, we're probably a dream to play with, you know. But, or to manage.
I
to manage
for you. Know,
maybe a nightmare.
Maybe you and me know that.
But the commitment that was taken for granted, that's not the case anymore.
One last question, right. So we'll talk a bit about Monaghan because their structures are the one that's being held up at the moment as being an absolute paradigm of brilliance and excellence. They have a population of 60,000, which is a quarter of the population of the available nationalist tradition maybe in Down. They play their league games, very important because it dictates where you play in the championship, and everybody has to play the vast majority of those games, give or take 4 or 5 out of the 16 panel. Do the senior players in Down play league games? Is it
I suppose we're in between Monaghan, where Monaghan and Armagh players notoriously just don't play club football. We're Down or somewhere in between. In saying that, you still have a very close connect between Monaghan, my understanding is club football, and the county setup. There's an enthusiasm there for both, and there's no enthusiasm there. If you're taken away out of a club Down team in the county, you're nearly guaranteed to come on back not as good a players when they left, and that is a huge problem. And clubs are kind of saying, and that goes for their development squads as well, they're not sending their best players, and they don't want their best players going. There's a lack of enthusiasm there for the county setup, just because of
at all levels
because there's a lack of enthusiasm there for the people that's running the county board.
Okay.
And you have that tension there. And as long as that's going to exist, forget about it.
Meath's problems, somebody said, go back to, and I can't remember who it was, it might have been Sean Boylan, was saying that they changed the club system in 01 or 02, and somebody at that point predicted that Meath football would never be the same again because they'd taken out some level of competitiveness within the clubs. Is this right?
Well, they went from straight knockout in the championship to a version of round robin. You know, it has changed over the years. It would have originally kind of would have been three or four groups of four or whatever it was, yeah. But they went from, so it used to be just one game, bang, you're gone. Yeah, I think, you know, there might be some credence to that, but I think that's too easy to say. Like what Danny is saying, Mead for a long time rested on their laurels. You know, we've spoken about this before. A lot of success, obviously, in the 90s, into even in the start of the 2000s. You know, All-Ireland final, 99 won it, All-Ireland final in 01. And when you really look at a golden generation there, kind of two golden generations, really, yeah. And then just a complete drop. And from a situation where the game moved on, Mead and Mead football did not move on. So it went from a situation where all of a sudden we were known for catch, kick, long ball into the full forward line, and all teams did was, well, they put two sweepers in there, broke the ball and cleaned us out every time. So, you know, there's a lot of layers to this, and as Danny said, you could be, you know, here for 2 or 3 hours talking about this. I think, to be fair to me, they have, and they've put an awful lot of work now in at underage, and, you know, DB, we were just saying it outside, it has to come from clubs. Like the ambition, you know, and you even look at, say, Mead last week against Dublin. You know, people will blame Mick O'Dowd, and okay, you know, I would have a feeling as a manager, when you send a team out, you know, they often say teams take the shape of a management team or of a manager, you know. So if you have a guy who's, you know, full-blooded, very kind of, you know, attack-minded himself, his team will generally have that kind of look. If you have a guy who's like Jim McGuinness, who thinks around things, he will obviously develop a system, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, the one thing I would have been disappointed last week, say, from a Mikko point of view, and maybe it wasn't even his fault, was just the intensity level. Like, he needed to go out and actually get stuck into Dublin, regardless of whether you were going to win or lose. But from a point of the actual players and the players coming through, you can see it very, very evident, and I even see it. I'm managing Dunshaughlin at the moment, the senior club. There's a generation there that have just gone. Like, I mean, there's a team there. There's a bunch of lads there who are 22, 23 now, I think, 23, 24, that won a minor Division 1 in Meath, and there's only two of them on the team. The rest, like, that's 20-odd lads.
How did it happen? Where did they go?
Some just gave up. Some just no interest in football anymore. Some headed off to Australia, whatever it is. Some just went to other sports. Like, the options are great. And as Danny says, when you have options as a young lad coming through, it can be fantastic. But options are also a bad thing in the sense of, you know, I ask for a certain commitment from you, and maybe I'm pushing you too much, and you say, oh, do you know what? I'm going to go down and play soccer because the soccer manager is actually a lot easier on me and I can enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah.
So getting back to that, the dictator of a manager, or the manager who feels that, ah, you know, he should be out here playing because he should want to play for Dunshaughlin, or he should want to play for Down, or he'd want to play for Meath, that is over, because it's no longer a Tuesday, Thursday at the weekend job. It's now nearly a full-time job. And, like, I know we go on about this. So that is reflected then in the Jim McGuinness thing of, listen, have I buy-in from you? And if you buy in from me, I'll give you as much as I can. He probably didn't promise them an All-Ireland, but I'd say he promised them, I will get you as close to that, the peak of that summit as I can. Now, if you heard that coming back from a fella and saying, what you put in, I'll put in, and I'll also listen to you. You know, like, you know yourself, DB. Like, lads, I see lads coming to training sometimes and are just, they're saying, you know, I would always say, I don't care. You give me an excuse. Don't try to pull the wool over my eyes. But if you're working, if you are caught late in work or you have to do something else, that's fine. Just tell me first. Don't, you know, there's no problem there. I'm not going to absolutely say, oh no, you have to be here. Like, you have to empathise with fellas in this day, you know, and you have to actually realise that there's other things going on, and football, although it's a big part of it, and you have to get buy-in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and we were chatting about the Donegal thing, you know. There's sometimes you can be lucky, and sometimes you can also have, you can create this culture that people talk about, you know. And the culture that McGuinness had, he had a number of older players who were still, although they would have been with the crew who were kind of bringing the jeans up in the bag, there were fellas who said, no, I can see an opportunity now to kind of get something out of my career at long last.
Yeah.
Then he had an under 21 crew who he had, who basically believed in him and said, we'll do anything for you. So he had a lovely mix. Like, we're talking about Dublin. you know, Jim Gavin, is Jim Gavin a mastermind? Has he brought all these lads along? Probably not. Like, I remember playing with Plunkett's, the lads in Plunkett's, you'd arrive in January pre-season training and most of them were in better shape than they were because they actually wanted to, they developed that culture themselves. You know, I still see some players playing Meath football and they're out of shape, you know, their diets are terrible and you're kind of going like, what's going on here? So the culture can be built by the manager, but to ultimately get a situation where you don't have, say, in Down and you don't have in certain things going on in Meath, is you need a culture built by the players, and that starts within the clubs. Fellas who want to play, fellas who want to be the best they can, and then that soaks up to the county team.
Do they get games, your players? Like, is it possible that generation of players who won a county minor title realise that if I play soccer, I'm going to play 27 games this year and I'll have an off-season of 8 weeks where I can go on holidays?
Yeah, well, look, we get back to the old adage. Like, I mean, that's an argument that definitely the county boards and, like, I mean, they do try their best. Like, we had a planner to start a year and then the Christy Ring thing happened and planner just goes out the window, you know. So there's lads, and in the best time of the year now, we've probably played 2 or 3 games in the last 7-8 weeks, you know. So there's that, right? But then you get into the whole county thing.
See, Monaghan had that fixed, and so maybe that's like, Monaghan had that fixed and their county team is brilliant. And it's like, it's no coincidence that they seem to have some of the best administrators in the country have come from there. Like, it's like, oh, I've learned this thing, I can go and bring that to a wider audience. And I don't think it's not chicken and egg. It's like, get your fixtures right, give people a reason to commit. People stay committed, they know exactly what that commitment is in terms of time, and then it's easier to have that conversation. Like, look, it's okay, go away this weekend, this is one of the league games, we're not tired and we don't have our county players, it doesn't work out. Do you know what I mean?
There's a big gap, I think, happening between some counties, some county boards and the clubs, because if you have a synergy between your county board and your management and it filters down to the clubs, that's good. But a lot of times the county manager is the boss. He will dictate the full picture for club scenes. I think, Muggsy, you're driven, right? You want to succeed whether it's on or off the pitch as a manager. I'd say if you asked a straw poll of every club player at the minute, are you enjoying what you do? I would definitely say more than 50% would say no. Because it's to them, they want to play football. Of course, yeah, I want to succeed, but they're not driven. And I don't think it's the be and end all, like what it might have been for us for the last 10 or 15 years of our lives when we were playing. I think there's so much other things that's important to them rather than it's just the one thing. It's just football. It's just the local pitch. It's just the local community. They have people have other goals in life.
And the good managers are going to appreciate that, right? And they'll say that half of my team are incredibly committed to this and the other half I need to have conversations with and try and at least wrestle a performance out of them, yeah, and get them to be committed for...
I always think if you have a panel of committed men, whether they're good, bad or indifferent footballers, you'll go a long way. If you know they're 100% committed. Now, they mightn't be the best footballers in the world, and oftentimes the men that you see out there are not technically the best footballers in the country, but they play like that. Yeah. And they're like, I have the height of admiration for Michael Darren McCauley because what he gives is 100%. Now, you don't see him doing the spectacular things that you think that a footballer of the year should be doing, but he is vital from whether it's his club Ballyboden or his county Dublin. And, you know, there would be people that would say he's not a midfielder. I'm going, he is 100% what you want in a dressing room or in a team, anywhere.
I think when you go back to McGuinness, and if you look at that, everybody seems to have taken the template that he used and said, this is how you get success. You put in a defensive system, you get full buy-in from everybody, and if you're not there, you know, don't come back, or I'm going to take your phones off you. So there's absolutely... You see, that kind of attitude has now filtered down to clubs, and you've got junior clubs and intermediate clubs now saying, it's all or nothing. And football doesn't work like that. I'm sure the guys would tell you, after a National League game, as a group, as a team, as much as anything else, we look forward to a night out, going out for a few pints and all the rest. And now, when it coming up to Championship time, you know, we that obviously didn't happen, but after every Championship match, we would have went out and had a few pints. And I think it was Tomás O'Shea was writing in a column there, maybe it was last week.
During the week, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a picture of the Irish squad having a beer after one of the matches, after the Italy match.
Italy game, yeah.
You know, and they had 1-0, that's fine. But that whole camaraderie, and you look at Wales, I'm sure Wales last night, there's a few sore heads this morning.
The Welsh team actually asked the Welsh FA to buy them a guitar.
That's right. That was right.
You know, this is like months and months ago, not this week or last week, or just this is in the build up to the Euros. After they lost a game, they had a serious session. I think it was Bale was singing and someone else, one of the players, were playing the guitar. Next thing they asked the Welsh FA, do you mind getting us a team guitar? Because this is what we like and this is what we do.
Yeah. But you have to, like, the sense of enjoyment, there's a time to work and there's a time to enjoy, you know, and you see, you even see it in the corporate world now. You know, people even realise in businesses that you can't just have a person coming in 8 till 5 or, you know, what David's hours, 10 till 3 during the week. Is that how you doing?
10 at night till...
But you have to, and you have to have a little bit, you know, and now people might say, oh, it's a lot of kind of wishy-washy stuff, you know, they have certain cultures, but that's, like... It's not all down to, say, you know, what I'm getting paid in a job. There's a lot of other stuff around that. So it's also then not just about the results on a team.
Yeah.
It's about a lot of other things. Yeah. It's about, you know, I asked at the start of the year, I said three questions. I said to the team, why, what and how. So the why was, why are you actually coming down here training? Why are you actually coming down here on, you know, when you could be doing a whole lot of other stuff, you know, and the variation in the answers is fantastic to see, you know, like, I mean, and it tells you a lot about people. But whether it's massive determination, you're getting a little bit older, or whether you just have a very, very driven young lad or whatever it is, but you have to try, as a manager, I feel that you have to try and tap into whatever it is that motivates that person. Now, it might be very, very difficult to find in some fellas. And then there's also fellas who you may never tap into it, and you're just saying, you know what, maybe you're better off just going playing soccer or playing PlayStation or something else. But as Davey said, if you can get 15 to 20 fellas then who, for whatever other reason, are going to buy in, you're going to go a long way. You can start actually trying to help them with skills and everything else.
I'm involved with a team at the minute, and we just had we're not going through a very good patch, but it's a Division 3 team, but they're good guys and good footballers. And we kind of asked ourselves the other day, like, what's our problem? What do we need?
The manager.
I didn't say I was manager. The majority of it, and it, if you put it, was team spirit, bonding, togetherness, a purpose, unity. All these things were coming out. And if you take a journey, you were away for 3 or 4 weeks. Like, that period you spent, like, that's invaluable as a team, as a program going forward, because you're closer, you know each other, you have a purpose, you're like a family.
You talk shit when you're out having a few drinks.
You know what? And Nathan will put the arm around you. I love you, Jar. And you know, well, maybe it wasn't that.
No, there's a bit of that.
If you put a bunch of, if you put 30 or 35 guys together, and maybe throw in the management team in a mix, and you get to know each other a wee bit more over a few pints. If you turn, we're like a band of kids, let's be honest, when you put us all together and a bit of crack. And unfortunately, when managers are coming in, they're getting, let's be honest, they're getting paid to do whatever they're doing. Expenses or whatever definition you want to put it. And the pressure, they're feeling a huge amount of pressure. And instead of taking that pressure and somehow taking it on themselves, because they are getting, they're actually channeling it on to the players, and they're asking more and more and more. And exactly. That's a club and county level. And when you're doing that, you're not taking the pressure all on yourself. You're actually putting that on to the players. And that's going for life pressure. At the end of the day, there's guys that haven't got jobs outside of Dublin. There's guys that are struggling at home for whatever reason, family situations or whatever. And those type of things, it's managing the team is not like it was 20 years ago, where life was simpler. Managing a team is nearly, you're like a counsellor, like a psychotherapist. I'm sure the boys that are involved in teams and would understand this. And I think it's become so serious that the enjoyment's out. And I would agree with Davey when he said 50% of, I would say, club players in the country are only playing because their father or mother or a relation, and they feel that pressure that they have to go and play at the club. It's not because they want to, it's because they feel that they have to. And that's a
terrible indictment, you know, for a sport, you know, and for what should be a sport that actually people should be able to enjoy, and you should be able to go, like, I mean,
what's
you
the
should
fix?
Be able to get away from your pressures.
Yeah, what's the fix?
Well, the fix is, first of all, you have to have a realization, be it that they're under 12, under 13, under 14. Like I see fellas, and you would have seen this, imagine say under 12s, under 13s, under 14s, and they don't realize that actually these kids take on a massive amount of information and could buy and sell you probably most of the times, and that you actually can't treat them like kids. You actually have to nearly treat them like adults, in a sense that you talk to them. And that pressure that Danny's talking about, you have to realise that as they go through school and as they, all these different things, that it's no longer just, as we say, the Tuesday, Thursday, kick the ball over the bar. It's everything that, like GAA and Gaelic football and hurling has become so big, and it's intertwined so much in Irish culture now, and there's so much focus on it, you know, that there has to be a realisation that it's actually, first of all, it's okay if you don't want to play it. So many kids I can see who like standing there going, I don't really particularly like this game.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay in school that you don't really have to play Gaelic, by the way. You can play the guitar. You can do something else. But then the kids who want to play it, that you're managing to streamline them. But not only just teaching them how to kick it with their left and right foot, you're actually teaching them how to deal with pressure, deal with different things, deal with disappointment. You're going to lose more games than you win. Yeah. Deal with all those different things. You know, and it is a scary situation that when you get to a point, say that you're with an inter-county team, and again the focus that is on that, that as soon as you fail as an inter-county team for whatever reason, you're just absolutely slated.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you're thrown out, and who would want to step up to the mark in that situation?
Well, it can't be any fun being a Meath footballer this week. It can't be any fun being a Down footballer this last year. It's certainly not fun being a Kildare footballer at the moment.
It ain't too pretty down in Mayo at the minute, but that's, you know, you're nearly hiding as a player. Like, I know some of the Mayo players that they've hidden, and because they feel embarrassed and they just don't want to face, because they feel that every player goes out to represent his people. I think that's the foundation of what you are as a county player. They feel they've failed to a degree. And it's
that's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
You know, and you go back to what Danny says, which is a great point about managers. You know, and it's all intertwined into the culture and the enjoyment of things. And I remember, what's his name, Woodward used to say that with England, they'd actually go on the beer after losses and they'd watch videos after wins. You know, so he flipped it on its head. You know, and the thing of trying to develop that thing of, listen, at the end of the day, it's a sport, right? You know what? You win, you lose, you move on. You try to learn from whatever way you do it.
Yeah.
But it's not the end of the world. And coupled with that, the pressure thing. Like, I watched... For you boys, it's an hour and a half, I may never get back in my life, but Kildare Westmeath last week, and that was two teams under massive pressure. They both, it was just like, neither of the team had any ambition. Both teams just wanted to shut each other down. When they were playing defensive and they got the ball back, they then actually realised, oh, now we have the ball. What do we do now? Because they didn't really want to attack. The transition from defence to attack was so slow, you could have put a turtle out there and you would have went up the pitch quicker. It was absolutely desperate stuff. And watched by about 2,000 people in Croke Park, it was shocking bad. The whole, if I was an American or a tourist coming in and someone said, this is our national game, I'd say, by genie.
Yeah.
Lovely, how are you ever?
Lovely seats, lovely stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
why is it so empty?
Yeah,
where are all the people?
But you talk about the pressure. You could see the Kildare lads. No one wanted to take a risk. No one wanted to have a cut. No one wanted to have a go. And then you go back to the Meath situation. Same thing. Containment. You know, let's try and contain. Let's not really go at Dublin. Let's not really go for the throat here. You know, everything about it was just, well, see, if we get bit by five or six here, we'd be happy enough.
I really do feel like if all the teams were competing against teams of similar standard and had something to aim for, it would make far more sense. If Kildare and Westmeath weren't, if the prize is that you're going to get scalped in a full croaker in 2 weeks' time, it's not a prize at all.
But I honestly think creating a Shield competition or whatever, the Christie Ring or
just
whatever.
Just have three divisions.
I honestly,
let's just have three divisions. Come on.
You say that to a Down footballer.
Well,
example.
Tough. But you're not good enough at the moment. And so you might actually win, and then the next year you might be good enough to compete.
But is the problem, though? Is the problem that those counties aren't good enough? I'd say to Dublin, you have to give counties like Down, like Carlow, like Laois, you have to give them hope. And the only way to give them hope is giving them more money. Dublin are in a very, very lucky position, as of Kerry, because of certain rurality to it and community based. And the same with Monaghan.
Kerry are bankrolled by Americans and by the Kerry Group.
But we're not. the bottom line is we're not bankrolled by anybody, and we haven't a penny, which is right.
Can I ask you, Danny, if I come up with 2 million now and give it to you and go back to Down, what would it change in
I wouldn't give that county board 2 million. What the Croke Park have to do now, and Peter Canavan made a brilliant point on Sky Television a number of weeks ago, and I think nobody, it's just more or less scared it over. At the administration side of any county, and we've seen it where Kildare administrators have got themselves into a bit of a bother a couple of years ago with that. What you have to do is put in proper administrators from Croke Park into counties and see that that Leinster report there would have come out a couple of weeks ago. Value for money. The value for money. If you look at Meath, I don't know how much was spent last weekend, but if you were a Meath supporter on the ground or in the club, where was your value for money last week? It's not there. I'm down. Where's our value for money? In a place where we haven't got a first round championship game since 1999.
Yeah.
The money part, I think, go back and you can see it now this weekend. And the teams that are successful now, it's a mirror image, but the teams that are successful have had minor and under 21 teams coming up in the last 6-7 years, whether it's the Cavans under 21s, definitely Dublin minors under 21s. I know the Mayo under 21s, Kerry minor 21s. They've all had a stepping stone. Tip. A prime example.
Yep.
They've went back, and you have a manager coming in as a county setup. Whether you go managing Mayo, I go managing Meath, or you go managing Down, Danny, we need to make a difference straight away. And that's what a lot of managers are trying to do in a senior team. Whereas, you know, you see during the week, and I have the height and respect from DJ Carey rang up the Kilkenny County Board and said, look it, I want to go manage the under 14 team.
The footballers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To manage under 14 footballers, because he kind of said, you know what, it's a disgrace the way what's happening. But I'm not going to. He didn't say I want to manage Kilkenny seniors.
No,
because he can't change the future. But you can. Well, if you have a proper structure,
he can't change now. Yeah, you're right.
But Cavan made a decision about 10 years ago that they were going to put in a series of interim managers for as long as they could, and they were just going to forget about the senior team, not invest them, and they're going to develop. And they have now. It takes 10 years for all these things to see through. And Dublin done the same, and Meath need to do the same, and so did Down.
In a way, it comes back to the Down County Board. But so Monaghan have raised money; they've got blue chip sponsors. That, why the hell can't Down, with that population, raise some cash?
Because the sponsors was talking to Benny Coulter actually there during the week, and he was talking to our sponsor Eagle Overseas, that are, you know, they're a multinational global company, and to be fair, they've been brilliant. Where they've Canal Court before that have invested, and Benny was talking to them, and they said they're really, even before we started the championship, they're now really considering their position with regard to supporting the senior team because of how poorly it looks on them, reflects it on them. And the only, probably, it's like anything, when you do anything that's nuclear, like when Cork strike, or, you know, when they used to strike, even, they don't really strike anymore, even though they're in a worse position. But that's, until you pull the money, until you pull the funds, nothing will change. And, you know.
The money thing is interesting, but, and I don't know the Down situation, but I know a part of the Dublin situation, and, you know, I would have chatted to Mossy about it. There's as much a structure around that as there is around the kind of the county board and the fixtures and everything else. Like, that is an actual, that's like an assassin. How we're going to go
organization,
absolutely, and get, and that's, you can't have the treasurer from the county board, right, who could be any lad, right? He could be a retired guard, and him tipping up to the CEO of a multinational organization and saying, would you give us €20,000 there? Because your man go, no, I'll give you five.
Yeah.
Right, out you go. You go with an absolute blueprint of, listen, this is where we're going. Yeah, you know what? It has been disappointing over the last number of years. Yes, we haven't lived up to the thing. But I tell you, if we develop and if we actually get the grassroots here, and with the help of you and the rest of the people that I'm going to talk to, and we develop a war chest, well, over the next 10 years, and by you, if you're on that train, and if you're willing to come on that journey with us,
you'll be rewarded.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's how you sell it. You don't say, give us 20,000 or 100,000 just to get us past this
year.
You
sell the proposition.
Yeah. Correct.
I still have to go back to the Connacht, the Leicesters, the Icelands. Like, money, they're you know.
It just doesn't happen.
It's the total end of the spectrum, but they're producing results. And on the back of that success, you can slowly but surely gather more money, and, you know, people who want to be associated with you.
Yeah.
And if they want to be associated with Jet, they'll join part of the journey. They're not just, a lot of sponsors now just don't want to stand in the sidelines. They want to get involved. They want to be interactive, whether it's the players, supporters, or the people.
They want content.
They want content.
You know what? Come down to a training session. You know, we'll get some of the lads to go into the whatever your organisation. We'll get a couple of the players to go in.
That's about having the personality and that human relationship. Those basic things that you need to have a relationship with somebody. And the problem is, in so many other counties, the vast majority of the counties, it is the treasurer that's looking after the jerseys, the finances, and all that kind of stuff, or paid Saturday or whatever else.
This is
and
the point about the professional administration.
That's right. And Peter Calvin hit the nail on the head, and I would contend that that needs to come down from Croke Park.
Well, I often wondered why you've got 32 separate counties, 31 obviously Kilkenny aren't, the footballers, all fighting for business and trying to get it. Why don't several of them just join together and you can have our minor team, our Camogie team, our women's football team and our senior team, and you get Kildare, Meath, Westmeath, Laois, Louth than Wicklow, and suddenly that's a population strand of enough.
You could do that,
and you've got one.
Sponsors might feel that there's not a and I'm just you're just throwing it at me, but the sponsors might feel that I don't have an absolute kind of major affiliation towards just one county. You know, like what you want to try to pull on is, I head up to Mayo, right, and I'm myself and DB go to a fella who's based in Mayo, or is an expat from Mayo, or is an actual company in Mayo, and you're dealing with you're trying to empathise and you're trying to get the Mayo angle there. If I say to him, look, sponsor Mayo, and would you also mind throwing a few bob for Sligo?
Well, so you can't do that. You've got to go to that would be you would be approaching the multinationals or the telecoms companies who are suddenly looking at the fact that your population swathe is now 500,000, as opposed to it's 100,000 here, it's 60,000 there. You can actually talk to people with big pots of money who can make those decisions.
Yeah, and that's how, I mean, like, I never really actually thought of what is the population down. Like, that shocked me, when you think of it. Yeah. And to think of, as you say, it's an affluent area, plenty of businesses on obviously either side, up and down, you're right there, you're like a link. And as DB said, you need to get, there's no point getting it and firing. Like, I can imagine, there was friends of me there for a long time, and I think it's still going. But every year, someone may even just send a letter, probably not even a letter. Yeah. Someone might have knocked on the door and, have you got that 5,000 you sent in last year? And these business owners, you may as well just take a lighter and just put it up to it.
Yeah.
Because they don't know where it's going.
Yep.
They can't, as you say, value for money. Now, to be fair, Meath has done great stuff, done Gani, all those centre of excellence, all that stuff, and they are putting massive structures in with development squads and all that. That is fantastic to see. But
The audit trail isn't very strong.
Well, I'd say like Tato have a sponsorship, right? And I think they cut the sponsorship in half this year, right? So, all of a sudden you've got the main sponsor and he cuts it in half for the five. Why? Because of a lack of success? Like, I'd be saying, I know what I'd say. Like, I mean, you have to say, listen, we're going on a 5, a 10, a 15 year plan here. And if you're not with me, fine, we'll find somebody else who is with me, and you build it up that way. And you don't just think of 12 months; you think of down the line.
Yeah,
yeah. Only recently, though, did you have taken in the fact that you can carry multi sponsors on a jersey now, which is a good thing, because you go to American football, you go to any of them teams, and I think Manchester United have a training kit sponsor, and then they have their main shirt sponsor. And the reality is, given how tight and how expensive things have got, that is a sensible route for the GAA to be taken.
You look at the Pro 12 that have some of the teams that have 7 or 8 sponsors, and as long as everyone's getting a share of the pie, and it's helping to feed them, it's from a marketing perspective, it's all done. Pride and passion and giving a few pound over, is that day is gone.
Can I just go back to Monaghan, though, because it seems to me like they're the example that actually embarrasses every other county into saying, okay, our systems are wrong, whatever we're doing across the board isn't working for us at the moment. Here's this tiny population, like the third least populous county in the country, and two Ulsters in with a chance.
They're not going to win an All Ireland. You do realise that?
Well, but at least they can dream,
Yeah. Ooh, oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're a lot closer.
Chris
than
Coleman,
that,
they can dream, but they're a lot closer than Down or Kildare.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, I think it's the administration. Like, I mean, we're not just saying money solves everything here. It doesn't, right? Because, as I said, you could be just firing it into a black hole. Like, I mean, the money has to, that's what I'm saying. You have to have this goes in here and that amount of money then goes to X and this amount of money goes to the 14s and
these,
the 15s.
These are the deliverables that we're measuring.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're, like, it's serious stuff now. You know, fellas handing over money in this day and age, like, eventually they're just going to go, ah, here, look, to be honest with you, I'm done, or I'll give you half. They just get fed up. You have to see, like anything, that there's an output here of what I'm actually doing. And maybe Monaghan have done that. Like, I was up at a gig there for free.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. That's right. I think you got my fee. Yeah. But we did a bit of a questions and answers thing. But I was amazed at a club in Paul Finley's club, right, up in Monaghan, and I could not believe just the way it was organised, the welcome we got. Everything was well done. Introduced the different fellas. You know, there was a bit of dinner. It was just run absolutely top notch compared to some of the gigs I've been at. There was probably about 20 or 30 tables sold, with about 10 or 15 people at each table. Just a very, very well done gig last year before the championship started. I just kind of said to myself, well, that's how you'd organise one of those.
Does any of them people know how to kick a ball? Probably not. As in, they're business people. They know how to structure an event or a plan or a purpose. And they don't need to know anything about football. Leave the football to the man on the sideline.
Yeah.
And I think that's any man you have coming in managing a senior team, he's not coming in with his CEO, CFO, your chair. They're already in place, and you're trying to know their structures, the way they operate. And 50% of the decision down to, I think, is a lot of them to appoint a county manager is what's his business plan, what's his financial,
but
what's
you
his
say
financial
about me,
Ger, overrun.
Absolutely, you talk about, you know, the thing about Sean. I'd say about, like, Sean had Keepak. You know, so he had the Keatons and he had Fintan Ginnity, and Fintan Ginnity was the chairman of Meath, and Fintan was a great chairman in the sense of, like, it was his way, but he did it, and himself and Sean worked in tandem. Now they battled against each other, but whatever Sean wanted, Fintan generally got for him, right? So he had the backing of that, and then he had Keepak, who were probably one of the biggest sponsors, do you know what I mean, at that time, and a man who allowed him to have his helicopter, you know, flying lads back and forward, like Jerry Mack back and forward from England, stuff that would not have been done anywhere else, probably.
Yeah.
They were one of the first to bring food in after training. You know, the lads, like, so that was a massive, like, I mean, I can only, what would the leap be now? But that was a massive leap forward for a county. You know, so again, I don't want to keep harping on about the money aspect, but
if it's used properly, it's an incredible, it divides teams.
It's a tool. And you throw into the mix, you look at this year, Leicester City win the Premier League, very tight-knit group, very parochial. You look at Meath and when they were going well, very, very parochial and rural and all the rest of it, and Monaghan, who are very parochial and very rural. They're not huge urban areas where people don't know each other, which, it's, to be honest, is becoming like that and down, you know, large towns where you don't know your neighbour. But you go into Monaghan and you've got all them guys pulling together. There was a show on about Iceland, 200 and something odd thousand or 300,000 odd people, and beating a country was 54 million. You know, that's if you add in that sense of togetherness with any team,
anything is possible,
and you have decent administrators, then you can do anything.
The Iceland thing is like 15 years in the making. They decided that they were going to have a winter league and a summer league, and the winter league would be indoors, and every small town got an indoor training area, and that was like 15 years ago, and suddenly the numbers and the amount of time and the time on the ball.
Didn't know that.
So there was a proper plan put in place, and now it's like still unbelievable that a few parish halls suddenly turn a team
but
into quarterfinals.
That's what Monaghan have done. They have galvanised their communities and their rural parishes and the players. Darren Hughes is a farmer, he has to go out and milk tomorrow and all the rest of it, and that you can see that right through Monaghan, and that sense of togetherness. Dick Clerkin, Dick wouldn't be there, and he's a great fella. He wouldn't be there if that togetherness wasn't there. If he felt isolated, if he felt, you know what, I'm not getting on with these young lads or whatever else, he would be gone.
Yeah.
But he's not, because of that sense of togetherness and that loyalty to Monaghan and everybody pulling in the one direction.
Look at the English team. Like, them guys are just living in their own, you know, their own little worlds within that team. Yeah. And there's togetherness, not next, nigh or near it.
Yeah. We've had a lot of texts on this, so I'm going to get to some of them now. It's the same here in Cork. There's no interest in GAA in Cork anymore. The inter-county games are attended by 75% kids who get in for free. The countryside tradition is dying out to more elite sports like rugby. Cork hurling is dead and will soon be extinct. Kids have no interest in GAA down here. There's a lot of negativity around Cork GAA at the moment.
But we're winning All Ireland at the height of Munster rugby as well.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, that meant it's okay. You have to look at it when you're not doing well, because it's an easy excuse to say that rugby is taken over, soccer is taken from them. But again, you look back and what was the problems in Cork 20 years ago, 10 years ago with their county board and their setup, and says a lot of the same are still there. There's been no fresh ideas, no fresh kind of turn over a new page.
Yes, yeah, that stuff probably coming home to roost right now.
Probably is.
That team might have covered it up, actually. Club players are sick to death of committing their lives to Gaelic football and getting nothing out of it. Do you feel this?
No, like, I mean, again,
like the three games in seven or eight weeks at the height of the summer, that would piss you off.
But like, I mean, you have to say then, look, lads, take a week, take 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
You know, so
you're clever about it, right?
But there has to be a proper, like, the schedule is a bit, like with the Christy Ring thing, that was a bit of a disaster for us. But we, to be fair to me, they did put out, and they said, those 2 weeks off there, you can, everyone guaranteed, yeah, bang. And you should know, 2 weeks before Mead play first round of the championship, you know, so i.e. the game against Louds, you say, well, you can, lads, organise. So we put a plan around. Yeah. We said, fellas, fill that out with your holidays. And again, you're not going to hammer a fella. Like, I mean, if a fella's going even on a J1, are you going to stop him? No, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, like,
what if somebody wants to go to Burning Man?
Oh, you'd probably stop that. You'd probably go with him.
Yeah. isn't that the tradition?
See what you can take back.
Here, do you get your county players for league games?
No.
Ever?
No. Like, I mean, you know, one of our lads has gone into the county maybe 8 weeks ago. And I've seen him, he's been down at one or two training sessions.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, just standing there, not training.
Yeah.
So, yes, you do lose. But, like, look, you know what? I'd accept that because you were coming into a first round, second round championship in Leinster. But I would be 100% behind. Like, the more games you get as a player.
Yeah.
When you're playing club league games or whatever, it doesn't make a difference. Yeah. Absolutely play the games.
Yeah. What's the fear? Is it exclusively injury? Or is it that, like...
It's you know what? Mayo had their club championship on last Sunday week. And I tell you now, if you brought someone from America and says, sit down there now and look at this game and point out the county players to me. These are the guys who are at the top. He'd be pointing out four or five different guys.
Yeah.
Because what it is that your county players are conditioned to play a certain way,
right,
in a certain style for a certain manager. And they come back then and they find it hard to adapt, to be going, well, I'm in midfield, I need to do everything.
Correct.
I need to stand, right. I need to kick, I need to tackle,
catch,
I need
do
to
everything. Yeah.
Do everything. But in a county setup, they have all different roles, and it's not the front, you know, it's not the shop window role that we all think.
Yeah.
And they find it hard to adapt and they don't stand out.
So there shouldn't be a fear, Ger. Sorry, Jim, but there shouldn't be a fear. And this idea of, like, we were meant to play a second championship round of championships, and our second round of championships was delayed because, and I can understand, but the Meath hurling manager decided that he was going to invoke the two-week kind of rule.
Yeah.
And the team we were meant to play, there was a lad who was on the subs on the Meath hurling team who was playing for that team. So we weren't allowed. So we were meant to have three championship games played before the Loud game. We've had one.
Okay.
Right. So that's going to be shoehorned in somewhere now along the line, and then it's going to be rattled off. And that, again, you know, you have lads then who have booked holidays, and they might end up missing this game. So you need to just say, listen.
Isn't that also the big problem? Is that, like, so we might lose a game, but ultimately the whole season continues apace, and we're not really here exclusively to win. We're here to be part of the community in which we partake, and at the end of it, somebody's going to win. But, like, we've all enriched our lives by being part of the thing.
Yeah, I've no bother with lads, you know, kind of missing games or losing. I've no problem with that at all.
But the fact that two clubs' seasons are not ruined in this one instance.
Absolutely,
but it could be like over.
There is,
was that only one player off the Meath hurling team?
Yeah,
and he was on your team,
the opposition team.
Oh, the opposition. Would they not say, look, we still play?
No.
You see,
I think they probably wanted to play, but I can't. Look,
you see, it's a winning at all costs, and it's a losing, you know, it's a winning at all costs mentality, and you've got a huge disconnect now between a county player and a club player. So when the county player comes back, he's disconnected. He hasn't been at any training sessions. Mm. He hasn't trained or played with his club. His mates there, he's probably drifting away from that because he doesn't get to go out with them anymore. And what you've a sense of isolation as a county player.
Yeah.
And I was feeling that, to be honest, if I was brutally honest, when I came, when I was feeling that sense of isolation at the very, very end of my career. Because you weren't getting to go out. You were sitting like a hermit in the house.
When you should actually be enjoying it the most.
When you should be enjoying it, and that experience that you have, and really enjoying your football, it was quite the opposite. I was feeling too much pressure. I was feeling completely disconnected from the club. And when I come back to the club, you know, maybe the standards weren't what you were expected, and then you would end up losing the head and clipping somebody at 3-0. And that's the reality. That's
but also the other side was you were then expected to completely run the show.
Absolutely.
And the pressure on you to do that. And when you're not, and if you're trying to plug holes and do everything, you end up having a disaster again yourself. As DB just said. And that is, like I saw with Plunkett's a lot when I was in Dublin. I think they had 4, 5, 6 players maybe on the Dublin team at one stage.
Yeah.
And I remember in 2009 when we lost the semi-final to Kerry, did Dublin lose the semi-final that year? Or did they get into the final? I think they lost the semi-final as well. Or maybe they lost the quarter-final.
It wasn't the Mayo, was it?
No, Kerry, I think, beat them out the gate, didn't they?
In the quarters. That's right.
So anyway, we went back in for Championship. And sure, they were nearly reintroducing themselves to lads because they hadn't been seen literally for probably nearly a year before. Yeah. Now, they were local lads, and obviously, but it was.
We used to have 4 or 5 guys on the county team with Ballina. And I remember if we lost early on before the days of the qualifiers back in your late 90s, club people would be coming up after the game, walking out of McHale Park and saying, "Come on, Brady, we have you now." Yeah. And I'm going, actually, maybe he's right. Because any year, when we were knocked out, and the sooner that we were back with our clubs, we were nearly unstoppable. But then the further it went on, your August, September, we were no good to no one coming back just for a bang-bang, rapid-fire championship.
You know, and I doubt if that disconnect exists in Monaghan. You know, I think that the county, the club and the administration is just...
Has to be one.
Linked. Yep. Which is, by the way, where you need to get to.
Absolutely. There are loads more texts here. I'm going to get to these, right? If we, the fans, aren't excited about Leinster semi-finals or other provincial equivalents, then there's something broken. I have 2 young kids, and due to my fully faded interest in GAA, my interests have turned to other sports. This is going to be passed on to my kids, and ultimately they'll grow up with possibly no more than a passive interest in GAA. It's not what I want, but I need to feel an excitement within myself towards games, and I ain't alone on that, as I've spoken with many people about this. Within the next 10 years, I feel a new generation of kids will grow with an apathy to the GAA due to this current relationship people like myself have today towards Gaelic games now. At best, I haven't any interest in watching the game before an All-Ireland semi-final now. I'm aware this is a broken record statement, but it stems from a time when a trip to Croker was something to look forward to, but now it doesn't register a conversation amongst fans with, at best, a fleeting interest, says Seamus from Kildare. And like, I can imagine it's hard to try and engender an interest in the Kildare senior football team.
You don't have to imagine. You are. Like, and you could hear it there. You said, what was the point in playing last week when we were going to go out in 3 weeks' time if we did win and get hammered? I would still say I'd give my right foot or right hand to go out and to get hammered. You know, to put myself in that situation. And the thing is, though,
you're from Mayo and you always had a chance.
Not always. Like
Mance's, from when you were a kid, though, from 96, you were a kid in that team, right?
I was a child, but Mance's, I hadn't, you know, what brought me and what brings a lot of players through is what happened 10 years ago. You know, when I was 89, I was 11 or 12.
Yeah, so,
you know?
So then
you have something to dream about. Yeah. You have nothing to dream about or to aspire to from a Kildare team that hasn't been there since, what, 98, was it?
Yeah. 2000 was the last time.
2000. You know, 16
years
ago.
Well, this was, in fairness, they got to a semi-final against Down. Michael says, the report released this week about how money was spent shows you all you need to know about how money is spent in the GAA. Give the money to people who don't understand how to structure and build successful teams and you'll waste your money. 90% of the GAA county boards are genuine, but having a clue how to put structures in place in their county, throwing money at it will solve nothing. In a way...
Well, that's exactly what we're saying. Yeah. We're saying don't just throw money on it. Because actually, it's unfair on that, say, treasurer.
Completely.
Just being, someone probably stuck his hand up at the AGM and he was like, oh, you're treasurer, by the way. You know, and have I a seconder there? And he's in the job.
And he has it for
12, 15... Yeah. Absolutely.
Looking at nearly €1 million.
Yeah, that is a scary proposition for a man or a woman going into that situation.
You know, it's like hand me a fishing rod and expect me go, you know, I wouldn't have the first idea what to do. And the reality, these guys are voluntary and either, you know, they're very privileged to be in that position and they don't want to seem incapable of doing it. And they'll end up, they'll just try and do it as best they can. And
do you remember the players, right, or ex-players over the last, say, 20 or 30 years, okay, who have been in business or have done business degrees or have done accountancy degrees or whoever it is and have maybe... retired or maybe are in, you know, a tricky situation with employment, why not try to engineer that?
Yeah.
You know, and say, listen, we have a vacancy now coming up in the Longford County
Board. They know
nothing
about football.
Whatever.
They don't have a clue about football.
Yeah.
And that's what's been said, kind of. You're going, I'm 100% agree with you, but sure, what does he know about football?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is not about football. This is about a structure and a process involving a very vital part of any success is money.
Yeah.
Your injuries, right?
Yeah.
You ended up with quite serious groin injuries, and the surgery was pretty, it's brutal.
Pretty invasive, yeah.
Yeah, the cut.
Yeah, it was at a doctor, tenotomy they called it, and then Gilmore's groin. It was actually Jerry McEntee done it. And it was actually, we played Monaghan in the semi-final of the Ulster Championship. We were 9 points down at the half-time, and we came back and we beat them by a point. It was great. It was one of the best feelings that you had in the athletic grounds. And we played Sligo, actually in a challenge match when we were a weekend away. And for whatever reason, I just developed this pain, and this real sharp pain, this stabbing pain, somebody stabbed me in the stomach, and I couldn't wait and walk for days after it. And I said, this definitely isn't right. And we were in the Ulster final, and I wasn't fit, but I started to get injection, cortisone injection after injection after injection. I'm sure the guys here have went through it all as well, and they're not pleasant either. But again, you done it. I haven't been in too many finals, never mind Ulster finals, with two I think in my career, and I really wanted to play, and I got the 15 minutes. But Donegal, that's the year Donegal won the Ireland, unless you're going in fully fit to these inter-county games, you've no chance, especially now. And Donegal, they were coming. It was like, I can only imagine it was like D-Day when the American and British soldiers were coming on. They were coming from all angles. And there was bullets going up. That's what it was like. They were coming from angles. The speed was scary. And that day I come off and I said, listen, unless I'm 100%, I'm not going to stand a chance now in this game.
Because you're going to be ridiculed afterwards. And they don't know what's the problem with your body.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
I came away then and I come back into the club, and the harder that I tried with the club, harder and harder, the more frustrated I got. And it actually got to a point where I was coming home and I wasn't talking to the fiance for maybe a day or 2 days. Didn't even want to talk about football. I was so frustrated with the whole thing. The pressure that I was putting on myself. And I rang James the night that I was supposed to go back, and I told him I wasn't going back. I was going to try and concentrate in club football. But I remember for weeks after, I was extremely low about it. I was extremely down about it, because this is my purpose in life was to play for Down and play county football, and that whole buzz that you get around it. And I was low about it, and it took me a long time to get over it, and I ended up, I never went back. But I suppose if I was to go back now, I took it far too serious. I took football far, far too serious. And if I had enjoyed it a wee bit more, I think it would have made a huge difference to my own football career, you know.
I read as well somewhere where you said that you didn't spend enough time on your flexibility. That
no.
You were busy lifting weights.
And
I wondered if actually this is also part of it. It feeds into the story during the week, is that strength and conditioning is obviously a very scientific thing.
Yeah.
And there's a load of counties that are just hiring people who are recommended to them, but actually if every county had somebody whose job it was to be the strength and conditioning person in that county and was a full time employee, and you know, as an under 14 you come and you do your tests and whatever it is, and they have records of everything you've done the whole way through,
right.
Somebody might have stopped you at some point and said your groins are an issue because you're loading up too much in the gym thing.
To be fair, it was only you have this rehab and prehab. When I first started off, you'd done a couple of laps. You've done a bit of stretching and it was straight into the game. It was lifting more. That's circuit training and all that kind of stuff. There was no such thing as prehab. We only started to get massages and stuff nearly in the late 2000s and stuff like that. That's how the science of Gaelic football has come on so much, and which is brilliant. But to be honest, the injuries are still racking up. The major injuries are still racking and racking and racking.
If you look back, was there as many injuries back in the 80s when there was, in my sense, there was a fellow with a bottle of Fri-Tex down the corner and that was it? You get slapped up and out you go. Go, man, Brady. Like, was there the Gilmore's groins? Like there's serious, serious injuries coming now in players and younger players. I know the minor team in Mayo that won the All-Ireland, I think something like 15 of them are not even able to play football at the minute, or they've carried serious long-term injuries over the last two or 3 years.
An element of that, I think, is the player themselves. I have to take a fair bit of fault there as well, because you were thinking, right, I have to lift more and more often and stronger. And as you wanted it more, as you wanted to win more and you wanted to play well more for your own personal aspirations, that you started to train more and demand more of yourself. And unfortunately, you didn't have anybody there to say, you know what, pull back here.
It's education. And the education is the big bit. You know, I remember I used to always try to take in the off season. I said, okay, I'm going to do something different to come back fitter, stronger, whatever it was. And it was probably the wrong thing to do, but I remember started kickboxing. Sure, I was kickboxing. Well, I remember a lad having me in the thing, and he had me try to do the splits. Sure, I'm there, and he's pulling my leg as I'm going. And I was going to get there. I'm amazed I didn't split in half. But I ended up having to get a Gilmore's groin fixed during that season, because I probably had done so much damage because
kicking this, a bag,
kicking this bag and kicking it probably like I was kicking a football, not kicking it like a kickboxer should kick it. But that came down to someone should have actually, well, probably no one knew, but it's an education thing. And you talk about the strength and condition, and DB is right about the injuries. There's a lot of lads out there as well who are, you know, strength and conditioning coaches, and they come in and the emphasis then all goes on all the strength and condition, you know, and it's focusing all on this. And there's nothing being done on the pitch.
Yeah.
To make a name for themselves. Jim Gammon has had a serious problem in Dublin. And he's really honed in on it. No, you're not. No, you're not doing extra. No, you're not going to the gym.
Yeah.
Outside of what we do, or what we say. No, you're not. He's pulled guys back. Because, you know, and it is scientific. Mm. But more is not always better. Yeah. And I think that's when you're struggling. Yeah. When you're trying to play catch up, you think, As you said at the start, I think it was Anthony Daly that said it, if they were doing Irish dancing five times a week, we'd all be doing Irish dance. You know, but it's if you copy someone, you're only going to equal. You're not going to better them. And I think it
brings us nicely around to the problem with everybody aping McGuinness. McGuinness did what he did because they were the resources that he had. No other county has the exact same resources.
No,
so it's completely stupid just to do that.
Absolutely, but like, I mean, you hear this every year. You know, X did this, you know, they've been, like someone has done, you know, SAQ was the big thing there for a while, you know. Yeah. Genie, everyone has to start jumping over ladders, you know, jumping over ladders, like, I mean, you know, you're a Gaelic football team, jumping through ladders and going back, like doing all this, like it reminds me of the old, you're up feeding the baby and you see the old the latest fitness gizmo from the States. It's kind of like, yo, what are we doing now? We're jumping on a trampoline holding a dumbbell.
That was the Park Harrington shirt that you wear.
There's always going to be something new, but is this going to make it? You know, is it going to, the GPS is for me, you know, they weren't in my time. Probably, thanks be to God. Because
yours seem to be broken there, David. It's like you're stuck in midfield.
I'm still doing my job, though. But, you know, the amount of information. Now, it's good at times, but I don't really know how the run. Had you GPS and...
Well, we were getting them. I have to be honest, you know, I'm not a woman, but I can only imagine a sports bra. It's hugely restrictive, those things. Mm. And you've got the wee thing on it. At the end of the day...
I'd say you'd be an A cup yourself, wouldn't you?
Minus. But when you came off a field as a player, like these two guys played in huge games over the years... When you come off a field, I knew myself, did I do my job? Did I play well? I don't need a computer to know that I emptied every single iota of what I could onto the field. And that is the problem. Everybody's trying to track everybody, what everybody's doing every minute of the day and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, if you would leave the responsibility and try that leadership within themselves, I know when I come off a field.
It has to come back to that. And I think this comes back to the whole idea of, be it the Monaghan setup, you know, from a corporate, say, structural standpoint, all the way down to a team setup, whether you're training under 14s or minor teams or whatever it is, that it actually has to come. And as you said it earlier on, DB outside, it has to come from the players.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Dublin went on the beer three times last year. When they won the league, when they won the Leinster final, when they won the All-Ireland. Meade went on the beer after the Loud game, right? After the Loud game, Dublin playing 2 weeks later. Now, you know, whether Mick O'Dowd, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't, like, and you could say, right, enjoying it and all that, but I know for a fact, if I'm saying I'm playing now the All-Ireland Champions in 2 weeks' time, you know, I know what I would say in the dressing room to the rest of the players, and I would hope that every single one of those would look back at me and go, absolutely, you might have one or two drinks, yeah, let's close her up, lads, let's say we've a big game in 2 weeks' time.
It wasn't now, just one or two though, was it?
No, it wasn't, but I'm not saying it's about taking the enjoyment out, but what it is it's taking ownership of it yourself, right, having the drive yourself to do it, and not many people do it. Like, becoming an inter-county player is not for everyone, like, I mean, the commitment involved and all that, yeah, stuff, but it is down to, ultimately, the manager can sit down with you and talk to you, but ultimately you have to ask that question yourself of, well, am I willing to do this? Because there are going to be massive sacrifices.
Yeah.
And that's then you either make it or not. When it comes down to whether it's worthwhile and all those different things, as Davey says, when you put on your jersey, whether you're playing for Longford, Carlow, Mayo, Dublin, whatever it is, you will get days where you go, that was absolutely, I will never, ever get that feeling again. Ever get that feeling again. And we've all had them.
Yeah.
You know, you just spoke about one there. And as soon as you started to speak about it, you could see, you know, you got passionate about it. You know, you've had plenty of them, Dahi. You just get them. And for all the times that you've been in the dirt and you've been thinking, what am I doing this for? When those days come, it's enormous. And for a manager, I think, and for young guys and fellas coming through, you won't get that. You won't get that playing PlayStations and drinking pints with your buddies.
I'd like to be a Westmeath player now. Since last week, because you have a challenge now. They have 2 or 3 weeks where they can, maybe they can dream, or they can visualise, but they have an opportunity to say, you know what, sometime, somewhere along this road, Dublin are going to be bet, and if it is, it's going to be in 2 weeks' time for me as a Meath player, and I'm going to do everything I can. That's sometimes it's in between that. It's the 60 minutes in Croke Park that they might say that's an absolute disaster after getting bet by 15 points. But it's these 2 or 3 weeks that actually encourage you to go on and do it again next year. Because these are the good times.
Yep.
These are the where you go, you know what, I have a bit of a step.
Absolutely.
I was saying to Anthony before, I would love a manager to come in and say, do you know what, we're not doing any strength and conditioning, we're just going to play football. And then when it comes to me, like, if I was a Meath man, and don't get me wrong, we played Longford last week and they beat us by 4 or 5 points. Terrible from a down perspective. Brilliant from Longford. Like, Micheál Quinn, outstanding footballer.
Yep.
And this man is so comfortable on the ball. But I was saying that if I was in the last 15 minutes and they were, you know, there was yahoos going about Croke Park and Dublin were keeping the ball, I'd be saying to myself, why are we doing this strength and conditioning? What is this all about? You know, and Westmeath need to look at Meath's performance and go, do you know what? If we keep it to 9 points, we're not going to get any credence for that.
Mm.
We need to go out. And even dare I say it, have a go. Just get in Dublin's faces, clip somebody, do something, but have a go. Go at them. Because this fear that people take in playing Dublin is the sole reason they're beat before they go onto the field. And instead of squatting this week or whatever else, go and kick a few points from 30, 40 yards. And that's I would implore teams
and
to do
it
that.
Is, Ger. Like, I mean, Rob Carroll, the on the stats, he put out a thing during the week where he was talking about these defensive systems. And he said, defensive systems being employed, but the scores haven't gone down.
No.
So the scoring, so fellas are still, teams are still scoring, right? Even though you're deploying a defensive system, the scores haven't gone down. There's still scores going over your bar. So, but actually, you're playing with no ambition. And what you end up doing is your players actually kind of become a robot, right? The Roscommon game this year, we did it for the News Talk, Roscommon versus Sligo. The first half.
Yeah.
Roscommon were so obsessed with, I should be here,
this
you should be there,
I
should be there. When I get the ball now, I have to go this way. And the second half, they just said, lads, go out and play, will you
please?
But
it was a brilliant game of football.
Absolutely.
It was actually a brilliant game of football.
But they created something like six goal chances in the second half. They railroaded Sligo. And Sligo, to be fair, had railroaded them in the first half, went at it. And they just couldn't stick with them. But the two teams then, one half, Sligo went at it. And in the second half, Roscommon just went gung-ho. They forgot about systems. They had fullbacks attacking.
Yeah.
That's what you need.
It's David and Goliath, right? But you'd switch it around. David used his strength, you know.
Absolutely.
Against a monster with only one eye and sticks. You know,
Dublin are better than Goliath is my problem with this.
Look, as a man says, if you're Goliath has his weaknesses too.
Right, some last text to wrap this. Monaghan club players play 18 league matches. County players play 14 games. On the other hand, Monaghan do have serious investment. Investec and FKM are two big sponsors, says Fred from Monaghan. It's that notion of them playing 14 of the 18 games and everybody knowing that they're playing 14 of the 18 games that I think brings everybody together. It means that the clubs don't get annoyed at the county team.
But that's 14 of it. That's just
perfect, right? Perfect,
fantastic.
I'm an underage coach in our local GAA club. This year I was asked to help out with our under 10 hurlers. I went to the session and came away thinking the fun's gone out of this. They were training the young lads like minors. On the flip side, I train the under 12 Camogie team. We try to ensure it's about fun and sending the kids home wanting to come back the next day and also get a hurl into their hands in the meantime. We're having great numbers. Some girls are back playing for the first time in years and we're winning, even though this isn't the priority. And most of all, the improvement is phenomenal. We need to reassess what's most important in each age group and stop putting kids under pressure. That's how you end up with good seniors.
Yeah, but to be fair, great point. But to be fair, the GAA are actually, like, I'm in the middle of doing a kind of the coaching course thing, and they've set it up for a few of the ex Mead players. And like, it was great to see. You're sitting there beside Trevor Giles and lads who were a lot more worthy to be called Mead players than I am. But what I'm saying is that it was just fantastic to see it. And they're doing the course and they actually are trying to develop. You know, Paddy Butler was down in Dunshaughlin Club and the Dunshaughlin lads are trying to get, you know, coaches coming down. And actually they're saying, listen, you know, let the kids enjoy it, you know, have certain things for them. And I know they do it, plenty of them. A lad that sits beside me and works involved with Kilmacud Crokes, and he said, you know, they always give a little prize out to the under 10s or 12s for who's the best trainer, and it might not necessarily be, you know. So it is, they are, to be fair, the GA have noticed that.
They have, but my fear is that you have someone going in that's an under 12 manager, and I see it across the country, that they're under 12 or 14 and they think they're fucking Jimmy McGuinness.
That's the problem.
Yeah, right. And they're going, right, I need the 5e, and you're going, boys.
Yeah.
Like, and again, Croke Park did pull back from the failed under 14s because of some of the professionalism that was coming into it.
Yeah.
And
the
pressure. It's, look at, my under 14s and 16s years were the most memorable because we had fun.
Yeah.
And it was the guys that grew up.
You didn't have warm weather training weekends, did you?
No, you had a crack. No. But on saying that, but I think where the GAA need to go with that is they genuinely, well, maybe it's down to the club as well, they have to nearly send a tic tac down to the club to say, you can't have an under 14 manager of a fella who's just, you know, like that. Like, I mean, who's just deciding to play 14 men behind the ball. You know, you have to have a situation, or who's just putting out his best team every week.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it happened. It happened to my own nephew. You know, he's playing under 12, he's only 10, but he was sitting in the absolute millions of rain a couple of weeks ago, and he was told, like, he was a sub, oh, warm up every night. Poor little lad was warming up, didn't come on. You know, and like, I mean, this is an under 12s game. Yep. You know, like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You need to, but that's, you know, and if people say, oh, that's a way too, step too far, it's not a step too far. Again, it's just a little bit of organisation within a club and
structure.
Within the organisation.
Not that hard to do.
See what the two guys are saying. Nothing, GAA, when you get to that senior level and you're in Croke Park or you're in Clonus or in Breffni Park and you win or you do something good, there's nothing in life recreates that feeling, that internal feeling that you have. And that's something that I will never replace, as Anthony and Davey will probably never replace it. And it's great that, you know, you have other things, you're involved with the team enough. And for young people now, if they don't experience that early enough in their career in football or whatever else or in life, then you lose them. And my fear is that we're going to lose our generations of potentially great players, that things can open up for them in life and everything. Because Gaelic has been good to me, and I'm sure it's been good to everybody here. So, you know, if they have that feeling, that sense of self-worth and whatever, that internal feeling that nothing else in life can recreate, then I think that we can get back to that then, and the GAA is going to be in a healthier place.
All right. Not a bad point to finish it up. Yep. My thanks to Danny Hughes, Anthony Moyles and David Brady for joining us this afternoon. Novak Djokovic has won the third set, but he's got a break point. Has he just broken? No, he hasn't. It's deuce in the first game of the third set. Right, lads, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Going to go to Wexford Park and Dave next.
Off the Ball with BetDak.com, the sports betting exchange. Serious about sports 24/7. Every season, every sport, every team.